From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief. State of Belief can be heard across the country weekends on Air America Radio. The program and this podcast are made possible by Interfaith Alliance and its members. For more information on Interfaith Alliance and its work promoting faith and freedom throughout America, visit interfaithalliance.org. And while you're there, please consider supporting State of Belief and this free podcast service by making a tax-deductible donation to Interfaith Alliance Foundation. We need your help to keep State of Belief on the air. Thank you for listening.
Air America Radio and the Interfaith Alliance Foundation present State of Belief, Religion and Radio Done Differently. Here's your host, the Reverend Welton Gaddy.
Welcome, everyone, to State of Belief. I'm Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance, broadcasting from the Ring of Fire Studios in Pensacola, Florida. On today's show, we'll remember the man who President Obama called one of the greatest U.S. senators of all time, Senator Edward Kennedy, who passed away earlier this week. Later in the show, we'll revisit my 2007 conversation with Senator Kennedy about his work on hate crimes legislation. And we will address the issue that will forever be associated with Kennedy's name, health care. Liberal radio host Mike Papantonio will be my guest shortly for an update on the healthcare debate. Plus, a look at what the new Quentin Tarantino film says about Jews on the big screen. The man we call the comic book rabbi will share his take on the new movie, Inglourious Basterds. But first, late last week, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America voted to lift the ban on non-celibate gay clergy and to allow pastors in committed same-gender relations to be ordained. Well, as you might guess, not everyone in the denomination is particularly happy about this decision. So joining me right now to discuss the reaction to this vote is Kevin Ekstrom, Editor-in-Chief with the Religion News Service. Kevin, thanks for being with us again on State of Belief.
Happy to be back.
So we saw how divisive this issue was in the Episcopal Church when it began ordaining openly gay clergy. Tell us a little bit about the reaction that you've picked up on from the Lutheran community.
Well, I think you can categorize it two ways. One, there is a bit of Lutheran Scandinavian reservedness going on. There's a lot of people who aren't happy. There's a lot of people who didn't quite think this would actually happen. But they're not exactly storming out the doors having a fit over this quite yet. Lutherans, as part of their DNA, are kind of intrinsically nice. And so there is a good deal of dissension over this, but that hasn't translated into the kind of outright anger that we saw with the Episcopalians.
And I know Mark Hansen, the presiding bishop in the Evangelical Lutheran Church, predicted that kind of what you've just said, this issue would be less divisive in his denomination than it was in the Episcopal Church. I have to say, I thought that was a very optimistic statement. Do you think he's being too optimistic, or does he know this group well?
Well, yes and yes. Bishop Hansen, for those who have never met him, has this extremely calming presence. And I think part of what he sees his job as in the next coming months is to try to keep everyone together. As he puts it, this cannot be a church dividing issue. Now, people can have their opinions about it. They may still, squabble about it, but he does not think that this is something that should cause people to leave the church. Now, obviously, that's his job to say that. I do think he genuinely believes that, and I think his own sort of personality will help in keeping folks together. But clearly, there are going to be some losses, and some people will leave over this. The question, I think, is how many.
Kevin, you sit in a place that lets you see the big picture as well as all of the smaller pictures. What is your take on this whole discussion of gays and lesbians in American churches, to be specific, within the Christian tradition, and how church leadership is making decisions? Is this going to just keep on and on and on? Is this an issue that ultimately will divide Christianity in America, or is that being too dramatic in an assessment of it?
Well, I've actually been thinking about this in a couple of days, the last couple of days, and I have a theory, actually, that rather than sort of an outright schism, what we're seeing is the development of two different ways of being church. So we already have two different ways of being Baptist, as you know. You can be an American Baptist or a Southern Baptist or a White Baptist or a Black Baptist. We already have two different ways of being Presbyterian. And I think what we're seeing this summer is we will have two different ways of being Anglican in the United States, either the Episcopal Church or the new Anglican Church of North America, and we might have two different ways of being Lutheran. And the question is, you know, at what price do we value unity at all costs? And what I think you're starting to see the beginnings of is folks are saying, you know what, we're not going to agree on this, and it doesn't make sense for us to keep fighting about it. So let's go our own ways. Let's do our own things. We'll work on the things that we can. But there's almost, I think, a developing sense that being able to not have to fight about this issue all the time is almost more important than trying to keep everyone at the same table. You might think of it as a couple that's getting divorced, but instead of moving into separate houses, one of the partners is going to take up their bedroom down the hall. They're still going to be there together, but on sort of a limited basis.
Kevin Ekstrom is editor-in-chief with Religion News Service, a very thoughtful person. Kevin, it's always good to have you on State of Belief, and thanks for doing it today.
We'll be happy to be back.
Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
I'm Welton Gaddy, and recently, Florida's governor wondered out loud whether God might be listening to his prayers. Right, in a speech to a group of real estate agents, Republican Charlie Crist talked about a trip that he took to Israel back in 2007, during which time he placed a prayer in the Western Wall. Crist's prayer read, "Dear God, please protect our Florida from storms and other difficulties." As the Associated Press reports, Crist is not trying to take credit for the hurricane-free years that followed. Well, thank goodness for that. But he did not hesitate to point out that Florida hasn't been hit by a major storm since he began praying. Thank God. Thank God, concludes Crist. And you can believe he means that literally. Now, look, friends, I'm not a politician. I'm just a bit of a theologian. And my take on this is that God would be concerned about everybody, not just about people in Florida. Sticking a piece of paper in an ancient wall is different from praying, even if it is the Western Wall. And after all, who wants a God swayed by a politician's media savvy rather than by a person's compassion and sincerity? But, you know, that's just my opinion, and I'm always interested in keeping religion and superstition distinguished from each other. Well, we've got to take a quick break right now. If you want to go away and pray or criticize the governor or whatever, come right back, because we're coming right back. You're going to like what's coming next.
Keeps raining all of the time. Oh, oh, keeps raining all of the time.
Hello again, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to State of Belief. I'm Welton Gaddy. And director Quentin Tarantino is back with a new film, Inglorious Bastards, in which a group of Jewish soldiers hunt down, kill, and scalp Nazis. Some critics have wondered whether this mix of overwhelming violence and historical fiction should be interpreted as a revenge fantasy for Jews. Others, like my next guest, have pointed out that this is a different portrayal of Jews on the big screen, not as victims of the Holocaust, but as avengers. With me by phone is Rabbi Simcha Weinstein. Rabbi Simcha is the author of the books Up, Up, and Ovay, How Jewish History, Culture, and Values Shaped the Comic Book Superhero, and Shtick Shift, Jewish Humor in the 21st Century. You've heard many times on State of Belief, Rabbi Simcha. He's a good friend. It's always great to speak with him, and today is no exception. Rabbi Simcha, welcome back.
As always, welcome. It's great to be on the show.
Now, one of the actors in this film, Eli Roth, has described the whole premise of the film, the Jews getting back at Hitler, as kosher porn. What do you think? Is it kosher porn?
Well, as a rabbi, I can tell you, Welton, there is no such thing as kosher porn. However, I think the movie is perhaps somewhat of a secret fantasy for many Jews. I mean, you know, Jews have always been portrayed in Holocaust movies as victims marching to the gas chambers. And here you have a movie in which Jews beat up Nazis, scalp Nazis, burn Nazis, and even carve swastikas into the foreheads of Nazis. And I think this is perhaps a very macabre, but at the same time, it's almost like a wish fulfillment, a fantasy figure for Jews who lost so much in the Holocaust. I think we're now seeing this sort of tough Jewish stereotype, which we've never really seen before, and I think it's quite liberating, it's quite exciting, and perhaps in America, anti-Semitism is less of a problem, and Jews are becoming more American, and America is becoming more Jewish.
So am I correct in if I say that I hear you reacting positively to this new portrayal?
Well, there's a danger. You know, I think that, you know, Nazi is really, it's becoming like the Jewish N-word, if I can say that. Mm-hmm. It depends who's saying, you know, I mean, obviously the Holocaust is not very funny. And I think it's context and narrative. The movie was produced by the Weinstein brothers at Miramax. And, you know, there is a danger that you don't want to sort of belittle the Holocaust and reduce the Holocaust to a punchline. But I think much like Mel Brooks brilliantly did with the song Springtime for Hitler as part of the producer's movie, that, you know, we're sort of dancing on the grave of Hitler and showing that we're having, you know, a sort of a victory among, you know, all this devastation.
Well, there's a recent article in Religion News Service that points out that Jewish law, of course, frowns on torturing an enemy. But is that the right lens through which to look at this movie?
Yeah, you have to remember, well, it's entertainment. It's Tarantino. You know, all his movies, you know, are known for gratuitous violence. And absolutely, you know, as a rabbi, I certainly would not encourage or advise in any way a congregant to take a baseball bat to an anti-Semite. Jews, you know, are not a violent people. It reminds me of the joke. There's two Jewish guys, they're walking through a particularly anti-Semitic neighborhood, and there's two skinhead hoodlums, and they're approaching. And one Jewish guy turns around to his friend. He says, you know, we've got to get out of here because there's two of them, and we're alone. So, you know, Jews have always, you know, we're a little bit nebbish. We're not known to be violent. We don't condone violence. And I think that's perhaps why this movie is getting so much attention, because we're seeing this real shtick shift. It's a real change. It's a real shift in the stereotype of a Jew on screen.
Now, I know it's a movie. I know it's entertainment. And I don't want to make too much of this, but I also want to ask you the question, do you think this film says anything larger about Judaism and our culture today?
It's a good question. I think, you know, it certainly says that Jews have become more prominent, more accepted. Anti-Semitism is less of a problem. And I think that so much Jewish censorship in movies has been Jewish self-censorship, that we've always been sort of nervous about portraying ourselves as the hero. We don't want to sort of offend anybody. I think it shows that Jews have come a long way. And I think, you know, the first real movie that I can think of that had a Jewish protagonist who was quite, you know, a tough guy was the movie The Hebrew Hammer, which came out in 2003. And in The Hebrew Hammer, which plays with African-American and Jewish cultural touchstones, the hammer drives a pimped-out Cadillac, and his license plate read L'Chaim, and his furry dice were really dreidel. So, you know, it's a lot of fun,
yeah.
And I think that, you know, it's positive, but at the same time, we have to be wary, and we must make sure that we honor the victims and that we don't reduce the Holocaust to a punchline.
Okay, so when all is said and done, did you like the film?
You know, Sarah Silverman says we're living in an age of full frontal nudity. I like the honesty, and I like the passion of Jews who are tough Jews. I'm not a fan of extreme violence, so I guess, you know, I'm on the fence. But I'll tell you something, that Tarantino is welcome at my synagogue anytime he wants to come.
I bet. Well, look, I we're just about out of time, but I can't let you go without asking you this question. For people like us who are interested in religion and pop culture, is there anything else that we ought to see or read that you recommend that we see or read before the summer's over?
Oh, you can't ask me that question, because I'm going to give you the obvious answer, which is the book Shtick Shift, Jewish Humor in the 21st Century is an absolute must. But I am seeing now, a sort of a genre of theology and pop culture, seeing, you know, a lot of books coming out. I think it's a positive thing.
Well, I think I hear you humbly saying that you wrote a great book.
I'm not saying it. I'm hinting. I'm alluding. But, you know, I think it's a pretty good book.
Rabbi Zinkel Weinstein is the author not only of that book, but also of Up, Up, and Oy Vey, How Jewish History, Culture, and Values Shaped the Comic Book Superhero. Rabbi Semke, it is always great talking with you. This was no exception. Thanks for being with us on State of Belief.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Still to come on today's show, we'll revisit an interview that I did with the late Senator Ted Kennedy on hate crimes legislation. And up next, my conversation with Mike Papantonio, host of Ring of Fire. Get ready for this one. You may even want to take notes on it. That's coming up right after this short break. We'll be right back.
Once a week, not enough? Check out our website, stateofbelief.com.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Welton Gaddy. This weekend, we're bringing you the show from the Ring of Fire Studios in Pensacola, Florida, a place that's been very good for us, friendly people. It's the same studio where Mike Papantonio and Robert Kennedy Jr. record their Air America program, also called Ring of Fire. And I'm delighted to be joined right now in studio by one of the hosts, Mike Papantonio. Mike joins me to shed some light on the healthcare debate and some other issues that are going to come up as well. In addition to his own show, Mike is a frequent commentator on Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, and he's the creator of Go Left TV, an outlet for news, political commentary, and special reports on the major issues facing Americans from the progressive point of view. Pap, thanks so much for being on State of Belief.
Thanks for the invitation, Will.
I ask you here, hoping that we might take some time with you doing analysis on the health care debate, but we have this terribly heavy, sad news hanging over us caused by the death of Senator Kennedy, who died this past week at age 77. I want to ask you for a moment, Pap, about what this means for health care reform, and we'll get to that. But first, would you just reflect on what the loss of this man means for this country?
Yeah, the thing that really stuck with me, there's so many interesting aspects to Ted Kennedy. But I think one thing that always moved me is he tried to live that Hubert Humphrey philosophy. Hubert Humphrey, he was quoted as saying that you judge a government and you judge a culture by how they treat their children, how they treat the elderly, how they treat the very least of their society. Hubert Humphrey believed in that and stood for that. And it was something that had a big impression on Ted Kennedy. Now, you hear all of this, as this week has gone through, we've heard so many takes on him as a politician, but really they miss the fact that is pretty apparent if you really know who Ted Kennedy is, that most Americans have been affected by his legislation, whether it was health care, education, civil rights, rights of the elderly, rights of women, Meals on Wheels. It's endless the way that Ted Kennedy's touch affected so many Americans. And I think people are missing that in the discussion. I mean, yeah, he was a great politician. He could make something happen with phone calls. But they missed that really human side of what was, if you distill what he was about, it is that Hubert Humphrey statement that we judge our culture according to how we treat people.
Lots of people on Capitol Hill have said that Kennedy's physical absence over the last year probably contributed to the really deep divide that we see now between Democrats and Republicans over this health care legislation, and that the Senate was really lacking his ability to lead others in compromise. Would we have seen a different debate? Would we know a different outcome now on health care?
You know what? I really don't think so, Weldon. I think it's an interesting observation, and you know I've heard it repeated so many times. But you still have the Max Baucus folks involved. You still have a guy that gets 50 million dollars from the insurance industry, and these are the people that are driving this. You still have the Blue Dog Democrats that Obama has allowed to participate by way of the Finance Committee. I mean, he could have shut them down anytime he wanted to. But maybe Kennedy would have done that. Maybe Kennedy would have said the Conrads and the nutcases that, you know, are from Montana and, the Hinterville of United States that make up 2% of the population. Maybe he would say to them, look, guys, you know, there's a cost to what you're doing here. You know, and it's going to cost you a lot more than you think it's going to cost you. And maybe Kennedy would have done that. Obama's not going to do it. But in the end, I don't know that it would have been a big difference when you have an industry that's spending $1.4 million a day on lobbying and phonied up grassroots groups organizations that are showing up at town hall meetings. That's a big thing to overcome. And no matter how powerful a legislator is, it's very tough to overcome that.
I've been hearing some people say after Senator Kennedy's death that perhaps now Congress will move to honor him and pass health care. I don't see that. Do you?
No, I don't see it at all. I mean, look, there's only one thing that drives this Congress, and is how much money are they getting from the insurance companies? How much money are they getting from the health care companies? And with very few exceptions, I mean, you have the Bernie Sanders kind of exceptions up there, but those are the exceptions. The norm is that you have, you know, Boehner, who, you know, what last number I think he got $400,000 from the health care industry. How are you gonna intercede and say, well, you gotta really care about people? Till you take that money out of it, you're not gonna have the kind of reform that you need. The insurance company is so look, it is one of the wealthiest industries on the planet, not just in America, on the planet. you have an industry that's completely unregulated by, you know, they're not regulated by antitrust laws. They can set whatever kind of prices they want. Aside from the baseball industry, there's no other industry in America that has that kind of exemption from antitrust oversight. Mm-hmm. So they can price fix. They can call you and say, you know, we're going to raise your premiums 20% without any rationale for it. They can say we're going to cancel you because without rationale. They can say we're not going to pay this claim. So, you know, to take on an industry that powerful, I don't care whether you're Ted Kennedy or 10 Ted Kennedys. It's got to be somebody who's willing to say, I'm not going to take your money here, AIG.
I saw a figure, Pap, just a day or so ago that 45% of the American people, this comes from an NBC poll, believe that government actually would make end-of-life care decisions for the elderly. Now, you've mm-hmm. got Tony Perkins from the Family Research Council out there talking about mass abortion and death panels. Are you surprised that the American public is being swayed this
way? Not at all. Listen, the American public, the last numbers, if you'll take a look at it, read and comprehend on a 6th to 7th grade level. That's a startling statistic, but it's the truth. It's the same thing Goebbels understood in 1933. It is that people react to fear. Elderly react to the fact that somehow their Medicare is going to be taken away. Elderly react to the idea that they're going to be sitting in front of a death panel fighting for their life just to stay alive. Now the newest GOP twist is that the military veterans are now on a death panel. You know, so, I mean, it's the birther mentality that only occurs in America because, A, we're less educated. B, we've stopped doing things like teaching basic civics in class. C, when is the last time, Weldon, that you interviewed somebody graduating from college and asked them, who is your favorite classic writer? I mean, who's your favorite writer? Tell me three things that Steinbeck wrote. Tell me about four things that Hemingway wrote. Tell me about Joseph Conrad or Upton Sinclair. Tell me, what did they write and what did they stand? They'll look at you with a glazed over eyes because there's no depth, okay? So that's what we're working with. We're working with basically almost a third world kind of education mentality. You can't talk about issues of morality. You can't talk about the greater good when they can't even process basic ideas. I mean, so these fear tactics work. Yeah, they believe there's a death panel. There's, you know, they still believe that Obama is not entitled to be president because he wasn't born in the U.S. I mean, these are people that, you know, they understand the Goebbels principle. That is, tell the lie. It's going to stick. The frenzy is going to be there anytime you can dress it up with fear.
Howard Kurtz from The Washington Post has said that this is a stunning illustration of the traditional media's impotence. What grade do you give the media on how they're handling the healthcare debate?
Well, for their pocketbook, I give them an A. You understand, don't miss this. Don't miss this, what I'm about to tell you. You understand, why would NBC or ABC or CBS or any of the stations, why would they want to pass legislation that says to them that we're going to put an extra burden on you? That, first of all, you as an executive, if you're making more than $2 million a year, we're going to tack on another 5% surcharge for your tax. They don't want to do that. Then look at it from the number crunchers that are sitting in the office up there in New York saying, golly, you know, Joe, take a look at this. It's going to cost us another several million dollars under this plan. So always follow the money, Weldon. Always follow the money. I do it every day in court. And when you follow the money, you get the real answer. Yes, they are. The average journalist coming out of school nowadays has about the depth of, you know, a glass of water. There's no depth there. Second of all, they're not motivated to go out and get the story because the people in charge are not interested in that story. The other thing is you have this ridiculous fear that takes place in the media. You know, if you think about it, the Sagebrush Rebellion came up with this idea, tell the media that they're liberal, tell America liberal, liberal, tell the media to be fair, to be afraid of being labeled liberal, and you're going to be able to manipulate them however you want. So that's a factor. But it really comes down to money. You know, ABC doesn't want to pass this. I mean, Fox News doesn't want to pass this. So you're getting exactly what you'd expect. My God, even New York Times. I mean, New York Times shows up at these town hall meetings and they give credence to some of these wackadoodles that are there screaming at the top of their lungs.
So what's going to happen?
Well, I think what's going to happen is we're going to come up with something that's ridiculously watered down. And Rahm Emanuel is going to proclaim that it's a victory. And it's going to be more evident that Obama's notion of change now was a fantasy. It was a great political slogan, but it's no more significant than that. This idea that we're going to see this remarkable progressive change in America, it was fantasy.
Mike Papantonio is host of Ring of Fire on Air America Radio, creator of GoLeftTV.com, a good personal friend. Every time we're together, I try to get him to resolve to speak his mind more clearly and enthusiastically. Pap, thanks for being with us on State of Belief.
Thanks a lot, Willen.
I'm Welton Gaddy, and up next on the show, we remember a man who was not only the lion of the U.S. Senate, he was also a man deeply devoted to the issues of equality and civil rights. After this short break, I'll leave you with some final thoughts on the passing of a great U.S. Senator, Senator Edward Kennedy. That's coming up. Please stay tuned. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Welton Gaddy. This is State of Belief. And sadly, I find myself once again in the position of mourning the passing of another great American. With the death of Senator Edward Kennedy earlier this week, our nation has lost a visionary patriot. And we here at Interfaith Alliance have lost a courageous colleague. And the poorest and weakest people in this land have lost a vigorous advocate. My first association with Senator Kennedy came in the early 1970s when I worked with him on early initiatives to secure national health care. At that time, he was a young, always well-prepared, hard-working, eloquently articulate, influentially activist senator. As his tenure in the United States Senate increased in years, his work was marked by increased passion, greater wisdom, and sound strategic initiatives. Senator Kennedy has been a true leader and passionate advocate for legislation aimed at strengthening individual rights and assuring individual freedom. It was a pleasure to work with him on a wide range of legislation, including the passage of comprehensive hate crimes legislation. I had the opportunity to speak with Senator Kennedy here on State of Belief after the Senate passed federal hate crimes legislation back in October of 2007. I began the interview by thanking Senator Kennedy for mentioning the Interfaith Alliance from the floor of the Senate when introducing his remarks on the hate crime legislation.
Well, I want to tell you how much we valued, all of us in the United States valued, the Interfaith Alliance, not just a statement, but a support for this hate crimes legislation. So I appreciate the contributions of you, Reverend Gaddy, and so many of the Alliance on causes that are so important to the country. The Senate listened to your message, and your support was so essential.
Senator Kennedy, I'd like for you just to help our listeners with wording when they get asked the question, why do we need a federal hate crimes law? Isn't that for states to deal with? What's the best answer to that question?
The best answer to that question is that all crimes of violence are bad and have to be dealt with. But some crimes are focused on individuals about who they are because of the color of their skin or because of their sexual orientation. When we have a crime against one of them, it's not just a crime against the individual. It's a crime against a whole group. And we shouldn't fight those battles with one arm tied behind our back. If we're talking about those who've been singled out because of their disability, there have been people singled out because of their religion. There's been people singled out because of their race. And there have been people singled out because of sexual orientation. And that is a hate crime, and we ought to deal with it in a serious way.
Senator Kennedy, you honor us by being with us. Thank you for being with us on State of Belief.
All the best.
Bye-bye. You were just listening to my 2007 conversation with Senator Edward Kennedy, who died earlier this week. Ted Kennedy will be missed by all who long for our nation to live even more fully into the United States Constitution and maximize the wisdom of we, the people. I grieve his death, and I give thanks for his life. I want to leave you today with a quote from Senator Kennedy, speaking almost exactly this time last year at the Democratic National Convention. These are his words. "And this is the cause of my life," said Senator Kennedy. "New hope that we will break the old gridlock and guarantee that every American, north, south, east, west, young, old, will have decent, quality health care as a fundamental right and not a privilege." Friends, that's our show for this week. You want to get in touch with us? Well, write to us. Go to stateofbelief.com and click on the Contact Us page. Or you can call us at 202-238-3291. That's 202-238-3291. Tell us what you're thinking about. Tell us how you feel about the show. Speak to us about what's on your mind. State of Belief is brought to you each week by Interfaith Alliance. You want to get more involved in the cause for religious liberty? Here is a way to do it. Join us at the Interfaith Alliance. Become a member. Go to interfaithalliance.org to learn more. Thanks, as always, for the help extended by our good friends at the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C., and to Scott Milliken and others here at Ring of Fire Studio in Pensacola, Florida. Actually, I'll be back right here next week and right here on State of Belief next week with more stories from the intersection of religion and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy, and that's State of Belief.
State of Belief, religion and radio done differently.